This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host, and if this is your first Geekscape, strap yourselves in for some pop culture talk. All of the movies, video games, comic books, TV you can fit under the hood, right above your eyes, right there. Just like, open up your noggin, fit all that pop culture goodness in there. Sorry I didn't do a show last week. Valentine's Day and a bunch of stuff kind of took precedent. I've been working a ton, writing a ton too. It's crazy how much I've been writing, and you'll be hearing about that soon, I think, here on the Geekscape channels. I think there's more news. Before I bury it in the major news, I do want to mention that if you guys are subscribing to the audio feed of Geekscape, I had a fantastic conversation yesterday with TV showrunner Chris Black. If you watch Severance on Apple Plus, he was one of the head writers on Severance. He did some of the, I love all those episodes, but he was also the showrunner and co-creator with comic book writer Matt Fraction on Monarch, Legacy of Monsters, the Godzilla show on Apple Plus. Do people call it Monarch? I know I call it Monarch, Legacy of Monsters, that big title, but it's the Godzilla show on Apple Plus or Apple TV. Is it Apple TV, Apple Plus? Chris and I have been friends since he was doing a show called Outcast based on Robert Kirkman's comic, and I loved having him and Patrick Fugit on the show. If you guys have subscribed to Geekscape, you heard him last summer at Comic-Con, and we had an hour-long conversation about running a TV show, a writer's room, about making a Godzilla show, about kaiju, about writing, working with Kurt Russell, and there's some great stuff in the episode. So subscribe. It's coming down the pipe probably next week. But if you subscribe, you share this with your friends and all that, tell them to subscribe. They will be in the right place, ready, when that episode hits. So, Jonathan, why don't you have an episode last week? Things got a little crunchy for me in the life domain. Heidi, you're sitting just off camera to my right. If you're watching this on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitch, do you want to pop your face on camera real quick and tell them what took up so much of our time last week?
Well, I don't know if I want my face on camera. I don't know.
What is in there?
If
you're watching this live, Heidi's putting her little tummy on screen because we're having a baby. A little girl is coming to Geekscape. Our latest edition of the Geekscape Network is arriving first week of August. Last week of July, which would be insane because it's right in the middle of Comic-Con. Matt and we vacillate every week where Matt and I talk, and I think the current plan is to send Matt down with a new booth backdrop that we make and is creative and all this stuff, but then we can just like throw it in the trash. And like, if I have to, I don't think I'm going to be there for the full Comic-Con Geekscapist, which stinks because I have a really cool project we're launching.
Even if you're gone for a day, I'm going to be nervous.
Yeah, no, even if I'm gone for a day to go set up the booth and get Matt on the floor and whoever other Geekscape people are there doing Geekscape. So for Comic-Con, it's going to be tough. And I ran it past Chris Black yesterday. He's got two kids and obviously a 20 plus 30 year career in TV writing and in a lot of production schedules that get in the way of being a at-home dad or being there. And he said, Jonathan, family first. And I was like, okay, cool.
Thank you, Chris Black.
So Heidi's going to be a mom. I'm going to be a dad. In Geekscapists, y'all are going to be aunts, uncles, and everything in between to a little girl. It's going to be awesome. Yeah. So that was the big announcement. That was like, it just got so crunchy last week thank you, gorgeous. Heidi's taking off. But my guest today are awesome. Eric Brown's been on the show. He's a young adult author. He had a great episode. We talked a ton of a thing about writing when he was on the show. I love talking about writing and stories. That's why we made Geekscape. But I've not met Alyssa Lube, who, if you guys watch the Netflix's The Circle, which I know Matt Kelly watches religiously, you might know her. I've never met Alyssa. I met Alyssa like 2 seconds ago, just long enough to be like, oh, your audio is awesome. Cool. And they're my guests. Why? Because they have a brand new Geekscape podcast on this network called Yeah, Okay. Yeah, as in an abbreviation for young adult. It's all about young adult novelizations. That is what Eric writes. That's what Matt Kelly reads, I know. And we're going to talk to both Eric and Alyssa. I'm guessing Alyssa's a big fan of young adult novels. And we're going to talk about that for sure. Matt Kelly is in the chat right before I go to credits here, folks, and play the theme song. Matt just popped in to say, I'll make sure your daughter has a podcast by 2025. Sure. Let's have yet another up and coming podcast that trounces mine. And I'm totally okay. You don't understand, Matt, you, Eric, Alyssa, all the Geekscapists, you're all seeds. You're all my children. And I come in and I make sure you grow and I pour the water on it and I make sure you get sunlight. And that's what the Geekscape Network is. It's Jonathan is like a, this metaphor sucks. It's like a farmer, like making sure you guys all grow and see the light and have an awesome show in your audiences. Okay. That's enough of that. Before people dip on watching this, let's kick it to the theme song and let's come right back with Eric Brown and Alyssa Liu talking all about young adult novels. All right. Blast off. All right, Geekscapists, here we are. Brand new Geekscape podcast, and we're talking to Eric J. Brown, author Eric J. Brown. You got to say that. And his co-host, Alyssa Lube. They do this Yeah, Okay podcast on the Geekscape Network. It's a brand new podcast. If you guys are watching this on Facebook, Twitch, or YouTube, look for this logo right here. It's a nice cartoonification of the two of them, and they love talking young adult novels. And that's what Eric writes. I'm guessing that's what Alyssa enjoys. And let's bring him on the show to talk all about Yeah, Okay. Welcome to the network, folks.
Hey. Woo-hoo, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
The network and is Jonathan, growing.
I don't mean to correct you in your own home, but it is Y-A-O-K. As in A-O-K. To be about,
yeah, okay.
So Y-A-O-K. Actually, yeah. I asked Matt,
please
producer
correct
Matt.
Me. Please correct me. Yeah.
I asked producer Matt when he pitched it to us. I was like, is it like, yeah, okay, like, a question like, are you okay?
Like, okay,
or is it YA okay? And he was like, no, it's YA okay, like as in A okay. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. Okay, but it so does take sometimes, this. If you don't say it out loud, it does take a little bit.
YA okay. YA okay. I think we got that now. I mean, it is the abbreviation for young adult novels,
yeah,
and yes, books and all that. So I think it all works. Sorry, I'm dealing with a head cold and all this. It just doesn't stop. Everything just keeps going. Alyssa, I haven't met you. I've had Eric on the show. How did you run afoul of my friend Matthew Kelly?
Well, so when he saw me on the circle, he was doing a podcast for Mary Carey, who is a porn star. And
no,
so,
she's not. She's a mayoral candidate here in Los Angeles.
She is a mayoral candidate.
I see her as a former mayoral candidate. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. And I am a sex educator. And so that was what I talked a lot about when I was on the circle. I had a little vulva pillow with me. It's my teaching tool. And so he reached out to me to do the Mary Carey podcast. And I actually already knew who she was because she had done some documentaries and stuff that I had seen her in. So I was thrilled. I was so excited to meet her. And that's how Matt and I got connected. It was like in true Matt Kelly form, pretty much as soon as we signed off of that podcast, he was like, just going to throw this out there. Are you interested in doing a podcast? And then, you know, Matt Kelly
I sent
does,
you a Facebook like. I started following you on Instagram.
Yeah.
I know the Matt method.
The Matt method. But you know what? It works. It works because it was a very overwhelming time right when I came off of the show. And he was really consistent with me being like, you know, I think you'd be really great at this. Let's keep doing. Let's keep pushing through. And his consistency was the reason that I ended up doing it. So I have my own podcast
where we do more of like sex education stuff, and that's called Alyssa Explains It All. And then in the past couple of months, he and I think had just been talking about young adult novels, and I had Eric on my podcast and we had so much fun. And so we created, or Matt really created, the podcast for Eric and myself now.
I loved the idea of it when Matt pitched it to me. Sometimes Matt pitches me an idea and I go, really? Christmas 365? But I got to tell you, Christmas 365 between the months of November and January is an absolute juggernaut.
Yeah.
Matt. So I've just grown to be like, hey, Matt, just try it. Like, I love the mad scientists and Matt, and this is the playground for that stuff. And that being said, I thought that the YAOK, I thought that was just a hit from the beginning. And I think that even if people don't know about it up to this, I mean, if you're listening to this, you know about it now. If you read young adult novels or want to learn more about them, that's the podcast for you. And so I think that it's a vertical, at least in the literary world, that is pretty, and like, it's got an enthusiastic audience. I don't see why that wouldn't translate to people on podcasting, right? So I thought it was a great idea from the beginning. Talk to me about The Circle. I don't know anything about the Netflix Circle. Netflix, to me, I love Netflix. I just watched that The Biggest Night in Pop documentary about the We Are the World recording that I thought was awesome.
I haven't watched it yet. It's on my little queue.
Yeah. But some of the competition games, like I watched the first season of Love is Blind, because why not? You know it's going to be, course. You know what, it, you know, it's like, I think I know what's going to happen here. We're going to watch some drama. But how does The Circle work? What's the story there?
So The Circle, actually the first season for the US came out during the pandemic, which was a really perfect time because it has a similar like quarantine-y kind of vibe. So me and all of my castmates are brought into this big building, apartment building, and we never meet in person. We only communicate through this TV screen, and it's sort of a social media network type of feel, and they call it The Circle. And we play a bunch of games together. They, at some point, they brought like cakes to our door, and we had to decorate these cakes in, you know, a way that would describe our personality. And you basically are trying to get all of these strangers to get to know you through a screen and create alliances so that when we do these elimination rounds, you're still kept in the game. And the ultimate goal is to be kind of the last one standing. And whoever is that last one standing wins. It was $150,000 for my season.
It's not bad.
So I didn't, it's not bad. I didn't win, but the person who won my season was like, you couldn't ask for a better winner. So it was just a really fun experience. We had the Spice Girls on my season.
Oh, wow.
Which was kind of fun. Yeah.
That's cool. All of them?
Just two. Scary and Baby Spice.
Okay. Well, that's not bad.
Yeah. Not bad. I'll take two.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take one.
Yeah. So it's fun. And they throw in like fun little wrenches into the game. So they'll have like, the Spice Girls was a wrench. So they threw the two girls in as a profile. And we thought the profile coming in was just another player because we never meet anybody in person. And then like we're days into the game and we get this message from the Spice Girls. And we're like, we've been playing the game the whole time and you have to guess who we are. And so that was like part of our season. It was really fun.
You had to guess that they were the Spice Girls or that they were specifically Scary and Baby Spice?
You had to guess which profile was secretly the Spice Girls because they were came into the show and they played a profile of a person named Jared, and it was actually the two of them sitting in a room like down the hall
together
from us. Yeah.
Well, that's together. So cool. And Alyssa, when you're on the show playing, are you anonymous as well? So your actions and the things you say are represent you, not your name or your face. Is that correct?
So you can choose if you're going to go in as yourself. Okay. Or you can choose to go in as somebody else entirely and catfish. And that's part of your strategy. So for me, I thought going in as myself would be the best strategy for me. I didn't think I could pull off a catfish. And sure. I thought people would like the sex coaching thing. And so that was my strategy. I was like, I'm going to go in. I'm going to be super nice. I'm going to get on everybody's good side. Yeah, mostly worked. My boyfriend also did the show with me, and he went in as a 62-year-old mother. So.
But y'all didn't meet on the show in any way. Like y'all knew each other.
We met on the show. We met on the show. Oh, we met.
You were like,
after.
I kind of dig this 62-year-old mother. Yeah. I'm vibing like, with her.
So were you falling in love with the 62-year-old mother during the show? And you were just like, I don't know what it is about her.
Listen, I accept people of all ages and genders. It was. He reminded me a lot when he was playing the game as his mom. He reminded me a lot of my mom and like my family and home. And so he gave me such good vibes and good feelings the whole time. But I knew it was not. I knew it wasn't his mom. I was like, this is definitely not a 62-year-old woman.
But he modeled it after his own mother.
Yes. Yeah. So he used her pictures, wrote a profile based on her. He was calling himself Mama Carol throughout the game. It was a whole thing.
That's so cool.
That's then, easier though, because it's like he doesn't have to create lies. He already knows who it is.
He's an expert on that.
Yeah. Exactly.
When you afterwards, it was a public event or like a private party or something where you went up and said, and he said, "Hey, like I'm the person who was behind Mama Carol."
So at the finale, we all come out and it's revealed who's who and who was playing themselves and who was catfishing. And so that's when I saw that it was him for the first time. And so I met him on the finale, like actually met him on the finale. And then after that, he lived in, he still does, he lives in New Jersey and I live in New York. So me, him, and one other player who also lives in New York, we all would just get together all the time. And there was one night before the show like actually aired, because we could only talk to each other about it for a while. And there was night. Yeah, we get that our NDAs. So there's one night the third girl ended up bailing last minute. And so it was just him and I alone, and we went to dinner, and that was like when everything, the ball started kind of rolling, and then and now we've been dating almost 2 years.
But yeah, your friend got third wheeled. The other person from the
she got booted from the whole thing, because then we started dating. No, we still see her, but you know, in different
circles. You're out of the circle. You're out of the circle. Matt corrected me on the whole reality show thing. I do watch some reality TV. But he says, you also watched most of The Mole with Derek and I, because you guys were showing me the clips of fucking people losing their shit. And I thought it was amazing. And Alyssa got to meet the Spice Girls in person that season. That is awesome. You've always been a young adult fiction fan. What were some of the titles that drew you into it, Alyssa?
I've always liked young adult, even from when I was a young adult. But then as I got older, I think this kind of happens for a lot of people, where you fall out of reading because life gets busy. And just like reading in school, like wrecks the reading experience for so many people. It's not fun. And I think for a while I got it in my head that reading was like reading Catcher in the Rye and like reading like classics and like, you know, George Orwell, and like that stuff's great, but it's not really what I want to be like unwinding with necessarily. True. And so in the past couple of years, I've gotten back on my like reading game, and the things that I gravitate to a lot are young adult, because they're easy to read. You're not like stressing out over the plot line. Like I love throwing in things that are like a romance or a thriller, but it's like stressful sometimes. They're made for adults. So it's, you know, and when you're reading something that's a young adult, you know, you could read that in a week if you want to or less. And the storylines are always like, there's something really nice about the storylines being sort of like simple. Like I have one friend, I'm 30 now, and I have one friend who's 22. And anytime I talk to her, it like brings me right back to being 20. And I'm like, oh my God, the things that are important to you right now, it's so nice. I'm like, this is like going on a mental vacation. And YA feels like that to me a lot of the time, where it feels sort of like a mental vacation in a different way, because the themes are just a little younger. So that was like how this whole thing happened. And talking to Matt about it too is so funny, because he's older than me too. And like, we both have this thing where we're like, there's something so special about YA. Like, it just is such a cozy genre. And it just is, I don't know, it brought so much life back to reading for me.
You don't have to sell it to me. I mean, I'm somebody who's read comic books. I mean, there's a stack of comics by my bedside always.
Love
and I
it.
Think that, like, you know, of course you could always go and get the crime comics or the darker graphic novels, the more artistic stuff. But there's always going to be some dudes in tights in some of the comics and by my bedside. The same stuff that I enjoyed when I was 12 is the same stuff that's by my bedside when I was 45. It's just diversified a little bit. And I think if you go to my bedside now, there's maybe a self-help book. And I know there's a I like Steinbeck because he uses words. I just love the way he writes. So I like reading something of that nature. But when the brain jellies aren't vibing and I've got like insomnia at like 3 a.m. or something like that, or anxiety, I'm not reading like a classical piece of fiction. I'm reading comics. And yeah. I totally get that. And that resonates with me. Abe Duenas over in South Carolina says, I Know What You Did Last Summer, an OG young adult book. I'm trying to relate. Was that originally a book, Eric?
Yeah, it was a different story too. The movie's completely different from the book.
Is it? I haven't read the book.
The book is like, it's more of like kind of a thriller mystery than it is
not a
slasher.
Murder. Okay.
Yeah. Mm. So it's like, I think I read it when I was a kid, and I believe, he can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the setup is still the same, where there's a car accident and they cover it up somehow, and then they start getting like kind of notes trying to expose them. And I think there's blackmail instead of murder. Because it's with YA back in like the 90s and even the 80s, even in the early 2000s, it was not as
you're not killing
kids as it is now.
Yeah, you're not killing teenagers.
Now, I can kill kids all the time and all.
Well, you're writing post-apocalyptic YA books, right?
Like, yeah, I kill everybody.
Your YA books are like post-apocalyptic, and you're like, sitting here doing Logan's Run, like everybody over 25 is dead or something like that.
I mean, the Hunger Games is literal children killing each other. So
is it
like
not
true?
If I mean, I think that Battle Royale, the Japanese film, when I watched that around 2001, I think it was when everybody was trading the DVDs and dubs of Battle Royale, the Japanese film, and we were just like, oh my god, this is awesome. And it is absolutely the high school kids like getting gassed on the bus because this movie.
And I think that one was YA because they have
totally
in Japan. They're called light novels. And I think that one, the original, like that it's based on, I know they did a manga too, but I think the original it's based on is a novel. And I think that it's a light novel. So it's like for teens, but it's like a lot more violent than.
I'm hearing about this movie. I never knew about if it's a manga or a novel. I never knew about it, but I'm a Beat Takeshi fan, the actor, because he's in those one hard-boiled Japanese cop movies. And he plays a school teacher or a principal or something in this movie. Alyssa, you see him on a field trip in a bus and it's going through the mountains, and the kids start going to sleep as it goes into night, and then one of the kids wakes up and the adults on the bus are in hazmat suits or have a gas mask, and he's like, what's happening? And when they all wake up, they're in basically an abandoned island that has explosives all over it, like in Hunger Games. Like you gotta move sectors, and you're
and around
chained.
Their throats too.
Yeah, there's an explosive around your throat, so you have to keep moving, and you can't cheat. And then you're chained to like a desk or something. And as you step out of the classroom, you have an amount of time to get clear of the building and find a place to hide or set up. But they give you a random weapon. Like somebody gets like a harpoon gun. Somebody gets a gun. Somebody gets like, somebody I think gets like a frying pan. But I think the first survival book I read that was like that was Robert Heinlein did a book called Tunnel in the Sky. Are you familiar with that? Robert Heinlein, who wrote Starship Troopers, did a book. I think it was in the 70s where future school and for graduation, you learn to be a survivalist. It's called Tunnel in the Sky, and you go through a portal onto a very hostile planet where there's like killer monsters and stuff like that. And and something goes wrong. You're only supposed to be there for like a weekend of like graduation. And when you survive, you graduate. And something goes wrong and the kids are there for a month. And I remember like reading that book in middle school and being like, holy shit. If you guys are into like survival young adult stuff, like Robert Heinlein, sci-fi more than a young adult, but I remember Tunnel in the Sky being like, oh my god, the protagonist of the book takes a knife with him. You can take whatever you want. So people who like armor up, I remember that early in the book, he lands on the planet through the portal, through like the jump gate or whatever it is, and he only has like a knife and maybe stuff to make a fire. And he lands on like the chewed up body. It's already guy lasted 3 seconds because he came in super confident with all these weapons, and he lasted like 3 seconds because he wasn't watching his six, you know. And I loved that book. But stuff like that lends itself to Hunger Games. I tried reading Starship Troopers. Yeah. I just like the movie, I think it turns out.
But. Yeah, I think the movie did a good enough adaptation of it, though.
it's pretty different, but it hits the spot.
Yeah.
So, Eric, where are you at in your journey? Because I want to hear about, because you obviously came on last time to promote a book. Book came out.
Yeah, that was my debut. That was All That's Left in the World. It's my post-apocalyptic romance. And that one I actually have, it's going to be my third book that is coming out in May. And it is the sequel to that one, which everybody who, I don't know when I was on, when was I on Geekscape? Do you remember like what month?
I think it was the week of the release of.
Oh yeah, probably. I think book. It was like the week of or the week before.
And then you went
you went and wrote
something else, or you put out.
Yeah,
something
I have my written. Second book is a YA rom-com called Lose You to Find Me, and it is actually based on the after-school job that Matt Kelly and I had in high school and where we met. It's a retirement. This is a kid who's a server at a retirement community. I always pitch it as Empire Records in an old folks home.
Okay.
And it's just about, that one's a lot more low key. The post-apocalyptic one is very stressful for people when they're reading it.
Yeah.
Lose You to Find Me is a different kind of stress. It's dealing with like expectations and your future, like trying to figure out your future as a kid. And
it was a Paul Feig movie. It had Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart in it. It was about the Matt Kelly's going to throw it in the comments, I'm sure right now, but it was about the amusement park they worked on in the summer.
Yeah.
Do you remember that movie?
Adventureland.
Yeah. It's like that sort of thing where it's like, hey, this is our last summer we're going to get. And then it's the real world. We're all working together in this retirement community.
He basically has to train the guy who was his first crush ever. And like they were in summer camp together and then they lost contact for several years because he's in a private school. And now for the first time in years, he thinks that the universe is kind of being like, all right, look, you're going away to college. I'm going to give you one last chance to like confess and be able to like fall in love with this guy. And it's just about them trying to get that going, but also life likes to throw wrenches in there. So.
And that was the relationship you had with Matt Kelly?
No.
No, come on.
He's lovable. Sorry,
he's Matt. Lovable. No, Matt's lovable. How dare you? Matt's lovable.
Matt's out of my league, meaning like he's too Matt's, far above it.
Matt's amazing. Can you tell me an embarrassing
Matt's
story?
Matt's like here. I'm like here.
So what did Matt do at that retirement home that was humiliating? Let's get the goods.
I mentioned it in here. He worked in, there was two different areas you could work when you were a server. There was the dining room, and then there was, I think, the cafe is what it was called. And the cafe was like for the residents who didn't want to sit down to eat. They would just kind of come get their food, and I think they could like take it elsewhere or eat outside, whatever. Matt was working the cafe because that was easier, I'm going
to
say.
You just had to put the food up. Yeah.
Yes.
You're not waiting
to deal with the residents, where the residents, you have to sit there and take all of their orders, and they like to talk. So you have to like get through them and like kind of.
Matt does not like to talk. From what I can tell, Matt does not like to talk.
You would think that sometimes he would be in the dining room with us, but you would think that he would want to be in the dining room with us all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know why. You have to ask Matt. Matt, why were you working in the cafe instead of the dining
room? You don't want a bunch of old people killing themselves.
I know what it is now.
That's mean.
Because he got to hang out back there because they were less busy than
just
us.
Just dicking around.
So he was just talking the entire time. And every once in a while, he'd have to serve food.
Classic Matt Kelly being a slacker.
Matt Kelly, you slacker. a buddy of mine. No, it wasn't a buddy of mine. Heidi and I took the shuttle from LAX during Christmas back to the flight. We took the flyaway shuttle back to our car or whatever. And we rode with somebody who was coming back from Florida. And the distinct thing I remember about him telling me about his Christmas break was that he went to visit his parents in a retirement community in Florida, and there was a code that this retirement community that the people living there would put on their golf carts. What was it? It was like they'd put like a certain type of bumper sticker, or it's like the handkerchief code for old people who wanted to get busy.
Oh.
That's what it was like. It was like, sweetie, Heidi, you're in the, Heidi, you're in the comments.
On their little, like,
Heidi, you're in the comments. Do you remember that? Yeah, you were the one telling us. Sweetie, hold on. They can't hear you. Well, they can hear you, but you can't hear them. What was that dude saying on the shuttle?
He didn't know. I'm the one saying.
Okay, what's this code on retirement communities?
It's like the bath fluffy thing. The bath.
Come here, please. You're
I'm in a robe.
Oh, you're in a robe. Oh,
yeah,
okay. The tell me
puffs.
The bath.
Oh, puffs. Like a little loofah thing, like the.
Oh, it was. It was the loofahs.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
I was asking him about it because I had seen something about it, but he didn't know what I was talking.
Okay, so different colored loofahs meant like group one on one. Swinging
is the hanky code
down to party. It was the hanky code, but for old folks, and it was loofahs. And people would be like, why is there a loofah on this golf cart? And it's because Myrtle's about to pop her dentures out and get blizzy, get sloppy on it. That is crazy. Okay, so
good for her.
It was Heidi who told this story, not this guy on the bus. My old wife was like, I know all about this loofah code. So there's a loofah code.
They didn't have that at the retirement community that shall remain nameless.
You weren't aware of it.
I had to deliver meals to their room, so I would have been like, hey, why are there things hanging on their door handles or whatever? Okay. And nobody had a golf cart because it's not Florida. It's southeastern Pennsylvania. They don't want to drive around. They want to stay inside as much as possible.
Well, Matt Kelly is clearing things up in the comments. He says, the cafe was definitely easier but nicer. Everything in cafe was Excuse made to order, me. So I was grilling burgers and such. He thinks he's part of, you're part of the hoi polloi, I guess. He says,
excuse me, there was tablecloths and multiple place settings on each table. We had four forks that we had to put on.
You actually had to work.
Whoa.
Matt's over there playing music in the back. Okay. Well, Matt, if Eric would have told me that you were a slacker, it would have solved a lot of problems early on in Geekscape. You've made it this far, though, and we can't get rid of you because we love you now. All right. Talk to me about how y'all connected. Matt put you guys together?
Yeah.
Alyssa's podcast.
Yeah, he came on an episode of my podcast and we talked about his first book, and it was really fun. We had a good time. And I think like when we initially had that conversation, I think you were writing Lose You to Find Me, or was it done?
About the starting the podcast?
Yeah.
That was done. It was out. Yeah.
When we did my podcast. Yeah.
Right? Oh yeah. So Lose You to Find Me, I think either was about to come out or it had just come out.
Yeah. I already had like kind of connected with you on Instagram and we had so much fun. And part of the thing that I really like about the podcast is because Eric is in the industry and I just enjoy the industry, I get to learn a lot about the way that books are written. Like, this is all like so new to me. And we have guests who come on who are also YA authors, and hearing about the differences between everyone's writing process is also very cool. Like, I can't imagine writing a book. Like, that's like way too much of something. Like, I just don't think I'm creative enough to have that many ideas to fill a book.
Not with that attitude. You're going to get there. You're going to get there.
I know. But
the loofah code by Alyssa Loeb.
Literally,
Alyssa Loeb. Yeah,
the loofah code.
I called you. I called you Alyssa Loeb, like Lisa Loeb.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
It's been cool to learn about that whole process. The biggest lesson that I've learned is that Eric's writing style is way more chaotic than most, and so that's been a funny thing to unpack.
That's an understatement.
You not outline or anything? Like, what do you like? You just throw out your outline.
Please, Eric. Please explain.
Yeah.
I'm what's called a pantser. It means I write by the seat of my pants. I have a general idea of what happens at the beginning and the end, and then I have to fill in everything in between. So I'm basically telling myself the story.
How
when I'm writing.
How often do you reset?
How often do I reset? Like have to and,
like,
rewrite?
And you're like, I'm going to go back a chapter, or I'm going to go back. What's your course correct back? I mean, how much do you scrap in your course corrections?
I only do that if it's something that I know exactly where it is, because otherwise it's a lot of scrolling and trying to find it. If I know words, sometimes I'll do a control F and look for it.
Sure.
But otherwise it's usually, I'll like kind of just take a note, like handwrite it and like put a sticky note next to my computer so that when I'm doing editing, I remind myself to go back and do that. You would think that I'd learn my lesson at some point, but I haven't.
If it works for you.
I mean, it doesn't work for me though, because the sequel to All That's Left in the World is coming out in May, and I rewrote that entire book twice.
Okay, maybe three times.
There's a Word document on my computer. So like when I edit with my editor, I never want to get rid of things. There are some people. So sure. We had the episode's not out yet, but we had somebody on a couple weeks ago, my friend Anna, who she was talking about how there's some people who will, she's one of these people who will write an entire book and then say, okay, now I know what the story is. Now I start over. And she just rewrites the entire book.
Oh,
and
crap.
There are some people who, when they're doing that, they will take the entire Word document, put it in the trash, hit delete, and erase it completely from their computer and start over scratch.
Crazy.
If I did that, it like just the thought gives me panic. So
I understand,
anytime like, I delete something.
Yeah. I understand having a document that you cannibalize for parts that worked.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Like I have scenes that don't work in a screenplay, and I'll be like, fuck, but some of that stuff had heart, or some of that stuff was tonally right, but I didn't crack the code on structure or character or something. Let me take it. Let me put it in the scrap heap.
Yeah.
And let me cannibalize the stuff that worked and see if something. Sometimes things don't come back out of the scrap heap, but I definitely have a cannibalizing like document for each project.
So that's what I do too. And I have it. It's just called deleted stuff for this book.
Right.
And so with the sequel is called The Only Light Left Burning. So with the deleted stuff for The Only Light Left Burning, that Word document is 150,000 words. And to give you an idea, the final book is 104,000 words, the one that is being published.
Okay.
So there's 150,000 words of stuff that will never be published because I had to rewrite it.
What's the third book, though?
So wild.
Yeah.
Just change the names. Just massage it a little. That's the third book.
Massage third it book. A little.
Just massage
I will
it a
say...
little.
I like my
some good
editor
shit in there.
Kind of.
Just do it.
I don't know. My editor.
You're thinking about it.
Like, she said a couple of like things that I can't really go into because they might be spoilers. But
sure.
I was disappointed because I kind of had to change the entire idea that I had to begin with, and which for a sequel was really anxiety inducing for me, because there's already a lot of pressure to live up to the original. I don't need it to surpass it. I just kind of want it to live up to.
Yeah, they did that with Alien 3.
Yeah.
Well, they changed it a bit from what they were planning.
Well, that makes me feel so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's okay if you make a little Alien 3. Just don't make Alien Resurrection after that.
Well,
and then AVP and all that stuff.
That's what the 150,000 word document is.
The run for
no, I'm happy with the one that is coming out. And my editor was right. She always is. It's just it takes me a while to get there. So
how do we get Alyssa to write her young adult novel?
Page at a time.
This torrid sex novel. How do we do this? It's not a young adult novel. Maybe it's not a young adult novel.
Sounds like an adult romance to me.
Yeah. Well,
we've talked about even before like what rules you have to sort of play by for it to be young adult versus when it sort of starts to kind of like creep into adult too. Mm-hmm. And even like just now I was thinking about the books that I've read. I mean, it's only February. So really the books that I read last year that classify as young adult versus adult. And I'm like, I don't even know where I draw the line because they're just, I don't know. It's hard for me to really say.
Eric, or do you have an editor or publisher who kind of puts the bumpers on for you? Does that make sense? Like creatively, I wouldn't want anybody to really corral that kind of material. I mean, if you're being guided by tone, some of the content might.
Yeah.
As long as it's the tone, I feel like some of the content, if it gets a little bit risque or crosses a line, you're not writing these things alone, right? Yeah.
So I have in my second book, there's sex in it. It's not like they're not having sex on the page, but they are 17, 18-year-old kids who are basically, you know, exploring their sexuality in high school. And
like Matt Kelly did in the back of that cafe.
Exactly. Flipping burgers and just...
Yeah, flipping burgers.
Boning.
Just boning.
Boning.
Just go. You like ska? Good enough for me.
You like ska?
Hey, you like ska? Works for me. You want to watch Basket Case? Works for me.
Oh my God.
You ever seen Sleepaway Camp? And the what? We all have our different seduction techniques.
I love it.
His is no worse than anybody else's.
No.
In fact, they might be better.
Yeah. I mean.
I vote better.
Basket Case and some ska music playing. Go for it.
Hell yeah. I take it.
Yeah, there you go.
But I think that there's.
Alyssa's is, hey, did you play a 60-some-year-old woman?
Yes.
Correct. Exactly. Have you at any time successfully played someone 60 or older? Could you have an alter ego with an AARP card?
You know what I like about you? I want guys to go to therapy. You went full Freudian.
Oh, yeah.
You know about loofahs.
You went to some ancient Greek shit, eating your children stuff.
No.
I love it. He must have been exploring some stuff, and it came out the other side, and it better for it. I'm sorry, I cut you off so much, Eric. Eric, you were saying, and I don't even know how to get back there, but
well, I was talking about how there's no hard line or hard penis in YA of what you can or can't do. I think it's a lot of kind of understanding the audience, and also like if I were to write something where it's like on the page sex and it may be like feeling gratuitous or
not, I think character? You're not gonna betray
even that, not even character. I think it's just when you're reading an adult romance, you can read the sex scenes and be like, ooh, this is hot. When you're doing that for children, it gets creepy.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that that is what the line is. It's like, all right, well, how are you describing this? In what way are you describing this? And are you doing it in a way that, like, it turns pornographic?
Sure.
I think then the editor will step in and say, oh, no, you can't do this. What's wrong with you? Sorry. But I don't think that anybody who is writing YA would ever get to that point. Like, I don't think that it would even go past an agent. I think an agent would be like, oh no, you cannot do this.
You hear that, Alyssa? There's a safety net. You can be as gratuitous as you want.
I will say that doesn't mean you can't have sex on the page, because I do have a friend who, her debut, there is an on the page blowjob between, they were 18-year-old.
What's the name of this
book? In it, but it's called Some Mistakes Were Made, actually.
It's about me?
What's that? Yes.
Oh, I think that book would be Only Mistakes Were Made.
Oh, no.
Only Mistakes.
All right.
No, it's The Mistake Was Made. It's the last mistake you'll ever make.
And we all paid for it with Geekscape.
You'd think that somebody would have stopped me in 18 years, but Matt Kelly just had to fan the flames.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's cooking them burgers back in the old folks' home. So tell me, guys, I don't want y'all... You know what I mean? Like, sometimes we put on podcasts on this network. I'm just going to give you the hard truth. These podcasts, they last for a couple weeks, a couple months. They burn out. We ain't doing that this time. You hear me? You guys each other? You guys digging the show?
I have a whole list of authors that are coming on, so.
That's the best part, is there will always be another YA book coming out.
Yeah. We're a podcast network, not a projects network. Okay, you got
and
that?
And it's like, YA is very under just under supported by publishing.
Sure.
I don't know
you believe YA is under supported? It's so popular, don't you think? At least
but yeah, there's like, if for everybody who's even watching this right now, if they hadn't seen me come on before, they don't know about my book.
Correct.
So well, it's like there's some books that even if you are following like YA, like I follow YA because I write it and I genuinely love reading it. But if I am not online perpetually and I'm not following certain people who follow other authors that are sharing their stuff, I don't know about books that come out.
Well, you're
and writer, you there's have to be so writing. Many yeah. books that come out. There's so many YA books that come out because there's so much readership for it.
It's like manga. So, like people yeah. telling me to read certain manga books. I'm like, how do you find this stuff? I mean, it's yeah. bands. I think that I was just thinking about in really I was thinking politically about all of us in our own echo chambers, but were we any better when we only had three news sources on the TV back in the 50s, 60s? Well, none of us were there. But yeah. has the stratification of our message delivery sources just caused us to turn on our phones and go to our specific channels and be like, I want to prick myself with trauma? Or, you know what I mean? I'm going to go to the site that's going to piss me off. Or I'm going to go on Twitter or one of these other things and I'm going to read something that ticks me off, and that's going to be my news source, and that's going to shape my view of the world. But it's completely different than the person sharing a room with you. Whereas in the 50s, 60s, 40s, maybe 30s with the radio, and you were it wasn't as easy to be misinformed. Maybe it was. I mean, War of the Worlds, Orson Welles, they all thought that Martians were invading. But, you know, are we just misinforming each other or believing our own truths because we can stay in our lane? Whereas a while ago, everybody had to kind of share the same information and it was either mm-hmm. fact or wrong. Makes sense, mm-hmm. guys. That's what I think about. So when I think about yeah. Eric writing a YA book and telling me what he just said, that how does somebody find it? Mm. It's almost on us as storytellers to create your own verticals and create your own I call them like it's like the watering hole, right? Mm-hmm. Like you want to make sure that people are coming to your watering hole, and Geekscape to me is my watering hole, and I share it with all of you, and we want to make sure that people are coming to our watering hole, and maybe they discover YAK okay, maybe they discover Horror Movie Night, maybe they discover the Binge Town folks. But like the whole point is to create a watering hole so we can promote you guys in what your endeavors, you know, and that's why I have you guys mm-hmm. on the show. But is it, I mean, how fallible is that? It makes sense. Like,
I mean, that is partly like why Book Talk is so popular, because it's like, I can go on. My first book got big because the only reason I feel like I am a successful author at this point is because I posted a couple of videos on TikTok that just were the right videos at the right time. And it was around the time that Heartstopper came out in 2022, the first season. And I knew it was coming out, and I had always read the comic online. And I was like, when I pitched this to my agent and editor, I always was like, oh, it's Heartstopper in the apocalypse. And my agent didn't know what that was at the time. And now I was like, okay, well, now people are going to know about this because it's a Netflix show. They'll be able to watch it really quickly. So I was like, first thing on Friday when it premiered, I was like, have you binge watched Heartstopper? And are you looking for something else? You can check out my YA book. It's post-apocalyptic Heartstopper. And that got very popular very quickly because everybody was posting about it.
About
Heartstopper.
Yeah. You were adjacent. You were like doing that.
And so that's getting into other kind of things. And I know that there's,
I do I'm over think here like my genuine. Old ass is like, what the fuck is Heartstopper? You know what I mean? Like my old ass
it's
is
a
like,
Netflix show. You should definitely watch it.
Right. But I still got to watch the Circle thing. I gotta
get with Heartstopper. It's shorter.
I gotta pick up the seduction techniques of a 64-year-old woman.
Yeah, I mean, and if it helps my case at all, me and my boyfriend both get out about halfway through the show, so you don't I'm have to watch the whole season. Stuck.
Yeah, just stop after that.
What if you guys? You guys should do the Squid Game thing where you kill people.
Oh my god!
Don't do that. Don't do that. Alyssa, similarly, the circle has brought you some form of name mm-hmm. recognition, yeah. right?
Yeah,
What's the worst way that that has reared its head? Because I'm scared of that stuff.
I think the I'm lucky that it's never really, I don't get a lot of like super negative feedback, which is shocking to me because I was fully prepared, like bringing sex education into
it's a lightning rod, right?
Yeah, that it would just be, but I made a very firm effort to be like education and not necessarily like sexy when I was making my content. Sure. And, you know, it's 50-50 on if that really worked, because I think more recently I've posted things that were like, I'm still education, but I'm wearing a cuter outfit, and shockingly those have done better, but you know, that's my three.
shockingly. I mean, you know, it's insane. Yeah. That's just the world.
Crazy
we live in,
how
right?
that works.
I've been telling Matt to do
like
that for 10 years.
You posted today about sex toys.
Oh, thank you.
That's really good.
Matt, thank you. Matt, you got to show some skin on those TikToks.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I would love that, Matt. But I'm lucky that I haven't gotten a ton of negative feedback. I think the only thing that is, and it's not bad, it's actually been really fun, but it can be sort of like unexpected, is, and it's sort of like the reason why I wanted to do sex education and the reason why this was important to me to continue to do on platforms that didn't really want it there, is because I get so many messages from people asking me the craziest questions that you just would never expect someone to share with a stranger, but they do. And it's just once you give them like a tiny bit of room to like really share what it is that they're thinking about, they will tell you. And what's even stranger. Yeah. Or I would say more than halfway. Even stranger.
Too much information.
What's even strange for me, nothing is too much, honestly. Sure. Like there's really nothing you could say that you could shock me with anymore, which, you know. But what's even stranger are the people that I know in real life. It'll be like a relative who's in their 60s, and I see them at like only weddings and funerals, and I see them at a wedding, and they're asking me questions about their sex life, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe we're here, but okay. And right. So
you're like the Statue of Liberty. Bring on all of them. Like everyone.
Yes,
welcome.
Exactly.
Like,
I will take your meat.
You can't
and
shame
your...
that stuff. Yeah, it's not.
Yeah,
your place is not the shame. I think that's great. And you said something earlier that I was fascinated by. You say you post the content on platforms that don't want it or aren't already conducive to those kind of things. How do you make inroads into that?
So it's a lot of using silly words instead of the real words, which is really annoying.
Oh, like when they said corn instead of porn on TikTok?
Yeah, corn.
Okay,
I got it. And it's frustrating because as a sex educator, it's really important that people use the real words for the body part that they're referring to.
Blumpkin.
And not being able to do that. Yes, exactly. Not being able to do that is really frustrating.
I have to say pumpkin.
Exactly. And that's just no fun for anyone.
Right.
So that's part of it. And then just doing, sometimes you just have to make the content that you want to and hope that it's okay. I get content violations on what I post every single day, every day. I'm full of content violations and I can't do like a lot of functions on these social platforms are not available to me anymore, because of the content that I post. So that's kind of annoying too. Like for Instagram accounts over like a certain amount of followership or whatever, you can earn money on the post. And I don't have the ability to do that because of the type of content that I post. So they just basically like punish me, tell me to sit in a corner all the time. And it can sometimes even affect my views. Like there are times where my views are absolute poopy doo-doo caca and there's nothing I could do about it. And it's just because I used
the word. Algorithm got pissed at you.
Yeah, exactly. If I say the word sex, it's over.
we've been around a while, and we've had a lot of adult content creators on the show or with us at Comic-Con. Was fun. I don't know, Matt, were you there for that when our friend Axel Braun brought his cast of the not necessarily X-Men or Star Trek or whatever the parody movies was, and we had them signing at the Comic-Con booth, and the kids were all excited to get Marvel comic characters or Spider-Man or Superman to sign their stuff, and the parents knew who they were, but the kids I mean, we've done that kind of stuff, and yes, it is something that I have to be conscious of with Geekscape, because Google will bury your bury your stuff, and you'll end up being weighted down in searches. And Comic-Con specifically, I remember Vivid Video coming to me after the success of that signing, which was really a stunt. It was fun. I like those guys. They were cool. They're fun. And I like Axel. And I remember someone from Vivid was like, hey, what if we share the booth? And the truth is, if they share the booth at Comic-Con, there's a specific aisle at San Diego Comic-Con where they will put adult materials, and they would have relegated Geekscape there forever. Right. And that's just not the brand. I love having those people associated with the brand. I love having people like, I see this podcast Matt produces, and I don't think there should be shame in that. There should be a conversation about it always, but you know,
it's tough. And it's especially tough for people who are like actually sex workers, like people who make like OnlyFans content or whatever variety of that. And especially if you do, you can make exactly the type of content that I make and be a minority, and your content will be deprioritized. So there's like lots of crazy and
some
shit. These algorithms can be extremely prejudiced and racist. And so, you know, it's frustrating for me, but it's especially frustrating for people who are sex workers or in some minority groups. It's a tough category to be in, but at the same time, I chose it because it's important and because I knew I would get the platform from the show. And so like the information would get to somebody, and like, it's been a very special experience for me to be able to reach the people that I have and get messages from them that are like, I'm just so glad you're here, because before you were here, I didn't know who I was going to talk to about this. And that's really cool to be that person for people. That was my whole reason for wanting to go onto the show, with that purpose of like bringing the wobble pillow and doing the whole thing. And obviously like sex sells. But I obviously went onto the show and was like, I didn't flirt with a single person. I didn't flirt with a single person on that show.
64-year-old woman.
I know, but I didn't flirt with her on the show. She was married, you know, I fully respect her marriage.
Eric, likewise, do you ever feel like there's parameters put on you based on the LGBTQ or being a gay man? Do you think that there's parameters put on what you're expected to write or what your audience is expected to be? Or I'm just trying to get a different perspective here. Do you find a similar corral that you're put in?
I've been banned now in Tennessee and Kentucky.
Oh, that's a badge of honor on that shit.
I think
what's the matter? Texas wasn't like, come on, you got to work on those guys.
Well, that's Texas, they have that bill that they're trying to, have a rating to every book.
I grew up there. I can't go back there.
And I think it's in the Supreme Court of Texas right now. I think it's going to go probably to the Supreme Court of the United States, but it just doesn't make any sense. Why?
My family's still there. I can't go back. It breaks my heart.
You're requiring people to read every single book that comes out in order to give it a rating. And I'm sorry, that did not work out for the Motion Pictures Association of America at all.
So we're back to that.
Yes.
We're back to like McCarthyism in that code. The comic book industry destroyed themselves in America because of the comics code. And Geekscape, if you want a quick comic book education, like in the 50s when McCarthyism was going on and the book Seduction of the Innocent was published, it talked about how comic books were corrupting our kids because there were horror comics, romance comics, crime comics, etc. Humor comics like Mad Magazine turned itself into a magazine technically, so they could avoid it. But if you go to other countries, they have a rich culture. France, Japan, South America, Italy, they have a rich culture of comic books of various genres. We turned ourselves into a specific superheroes only comic book industry up through the 90s, and it wasn't until books like from Vertigo or really the 80s with stuff like Mouse, and those had to be called graphic novels, and Vertigo had to come out with stuff like Preacher and then The Walking Dead. It wasn't until that turn of the century that people started being like, what are we doing with the self-censorship code? And I remember when Joe Quesada took the Comics Code brand off the Marvel comics so they could have the Max line. And it was a little more of a hardcore line of comic characters and the Marvel characters like the Punisher, stuff like that. And the damage had been done. The comics has just got like superheroes now. People just think of it as superheroes.
I'm hoping that publishing has learned its lesson, because like in Virginia, I think they
always those states.
There were people who tried to sue Barnes and Noble for selling books,
not so noble now.
Like, and it wasn't, they weren't saying, oh, well, how dare this book be in your store? It's okay, well, you're selling it, so we're going to sue you. And it's like, well, that's obviously a First Amendment violation. You can't just sue a business for selling books. That one obviously didn't go forward. But I think a lot of publishers now are realizing, like, I think there's a lot of sales that are tanking, especially in YA, because school libraries have a very, very, very small budget. And they can't risk buying books that could possibly be challenged and then removed. And then that budget going to nothing because some parent somewhere got pissed off. And so there's a lot of librarians who aren't buying books like mine. And I actually I think I'm allowed to announce this now. I got tagged in a post about it. I'm nominated for an award in Illinois. It's a state award for the librarians for like the high schools in Illinois. And the whole state is now going to be able to purchase copies of my books for kids to read if they want to. And it's like, Texas is never going to do that. I'm never going to be nominated Florida, for that kind of award in Texas. I don't think I would even do it in Pennsylvania, which is where I live.
But you heard about the win in Wisconsin with Wisconsin just redid their maps fairly. Yeah. And that happened like yesterday, day before. So I don't know. We just have to outbreed them, Eric. Well,
here's the deal. Kids are going to keep reading them. And for my bottom line, it sucks because kids are going to have to pirate them. But
yeah,
if they're reading, if they're a queer kid in Texas Amazon. And they pirate my book.
You could buy it on Amazon in Texas, couldn't you?
Yeah, but then
or you think it's going to put you on a damn list, like if you get an abortion in Texas. We're getting so political, but I don't know.
Whatever, but I feel like a kid would need their own Amazon account.
This drives me crazy.
And they would need a credit card.
What you need to be doing is you need to be writing these books.
I think
you need to be writing this stuff. You need to be putting your voice out there. You can't just be part. I love that
you're there's only one taboo category too. I can mend today. It's only one, and it's the sex one.
You're writing. The book you need one to write is it. Eric. Eric.
I Eric, think work on the her. Brooklyn Get Library, her though, I think that they have something for states that are starting all of these bans where kids can sign up for free library cards for
that's cool.
Brooklyn's, like their ebooks.
They're going to carry
like
Alyssa's book soon.
Yeah.
The book that she's now going to write.
The Loofah Code.
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 Ooh. There's branding. Lots here. There's
lots Loofah here. Spelled with an LG.
I feel like by tomorrow afternoon latest, I'm going to have an outline from Matt. He's going
to outline
like, listen.
It. Just write it.
He's going to listen to this rough guy. Idea.
Let's get to page 180 and he's like, whoops.
Yeah. Rough idea, but I already have you a meeting ready to go at the end of the week. Don't worry.
We're doing it. Loofah Code's happening. The Loofah Code's happening. Guys, thank you for doing a show on the network. It means a lot.
Thanks
I love that you guys are doing it. Us.
It's great. Geekscapists, you can check out YAOK anywhere you pick up podcasts. Search for that. Search for Geekscape. We got tons of cool stuff on the Geekscape Network. Where can we find you guys socially?
You can find me on TikTok and Instagram at Alyssa Lube. It's AlyssaLjub.
I'm on TikTok and Instagram. My Instagram's Eric JB, and my TikTok is Eric John Brown. And you can also go to my website, ericjbrown.com.
Love it. Love it, guys. Thank you so much for spending this time with me. I'm Jonathan. You can search for Jonathan Lennon wherever. And you're going to get the guy who works for Compass Real Estate here in LA. Who's been trying to... but honestly,
If you Google me, search for and it's guy who works for Compass Real Estate, it actually is me. I'm also a Compass Real Estate agent.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Well,
I'm getting both of them.
I'd love to come to Philly and visit you and Matt, and I miss Philly a lot. We just got Geekscape is my old WXPN co-host and best friend from college. Kevin McCaffrey came out here. He's been on the show before. And while he was in Arizona, he found a bunch of DAT recordings of our old radio show. And these are interviews we did with bands like Weezer, Blink-182. We did recordings with bands like Newfound Glory and Saves the Day and The Bouncing Souls and all sorts of great punk bands and pop bands. And we found these DATs and we digitized them. And I don't know if that becomes Geekscape content. I don't know if the music can because licensing and some of that. But man, there's so much content from those days of me and my high-pitched voice. And it is right there in Philadelphia. We had so much fun. And I don't know how to roll it out on the network. But, you know, all in time. We ain't going anywhere. So search for us on any podcatcher. And if you like what you heard and you like what Geekscape's putting down, leave us a nice 5-star review. That helps our visibility. So when I go out to people and say, hey, you want to come on Geekscape? They have heard of us. And they come and do the show. Again, stay subscribed. I know I'm going to do a Madam Web special. Yes, I saw it. And then I recorded that conversation with Chris Black about show running Godzilla, the Apple TV show Monarch, King of the Monsters. I keep saying King of the Monsters. Monarch, Legacy of Monsters. So if you're a TV writer, you're not going to want to miss that one. Love you guys. Thanks for coming on. And don't hate, create.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.